First, in a 7-2 decision today, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Manhattan prosecutors could subpoena 8 years of President Trump's tax returns. In a separate decision, the justices also decided to shield the documents from a congressional inquiry, sending that case to a lower court. President Trump has long pushed back against making his tax returns public in a break from presidential precedent. Today, he tweeted that the decision means he'll have to, quote, keep fighting in a politically corrupt New York, end quote. And he said the move was unfair towards him and his administration. David Farenthold is a reporter for The Washington Post and covers the Trump family and its business interests. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thank you.
Well, David, people may have seen headlines this morning and thought, okay, those Trump tax returns are on their way. We're going to see them pretty soon. Probably not, right?
No, not so much. I mean, the legal dimension, this ruling was a loss for Trump because he had asserted this ability to be immune from any state-level investigation. But politically, it still serves his purposes in that I don't think anybody in the general public is going to see Trump's tax returns until after the 2020 election, and maybe not until long after the 2020 election.
Well, let's take us into this this Manhattan prosecutor and what they're trying to get from the president here and why. Just take us to the origins of this case, please.
Well, it goes back to the story of Stormy Daniels. Probably everybody remembers this adult film actress who was paid off right before the 2016 election so she wouldn't tell her story of an alleged affair with Trump. The Michael Cohen, who was Trump's lawyer at the time, paid Daniels, and then Cohen got paid back by the Trump Organization, Trump's business. And so what Cy Vance, the Manhattan District Attorney, is doing is looking to see whether any laws were broken in that payoff, that reimbursement. Did they hide anything, commit any sort of fraud in the way that they paid Cohen back and then accounted for that payment?
They can subpoena it now. That doesn't mean it's in their hands now, right? There would still be a process for that prosecutor to get hold of those tax returns. What would that look like?
Well, the Supreme Court's decision basically said that Trump was wrong to assert that he has a special immunity against subpoenas because he is president. But it said, but he still has the same power against subpoenas that you or I would have, which is you can say the subpoena is overbroad, the subpoena is burdensome. You know, there's some reason why the court shouldn't grant this sort of subpoena to a regular person. And so now what will happen is Trump will go back to New York and say and make those kinds of arguments. Look, you know, this subpoena is wrong for this or that reason. And there like will be some sort of delay as the court considers it. Whatever they rule could be appealed. You know, even if the court moves fast for a court, that could be weeks or months.
That's one of the two cases about the president's tax returns. Then we have Congress saying, hey, we want access to financial records from the president. What did the Supreme Court end up saying about their request now?
Basically, the Supreme Court said that Congress can ask for things like this, for financial records from presidents, but that in this specific case, Congress had overstepped its authority and asked for too much. It had asked for not just Trump's tax returns, but all records of financial transactions for the last several years, including Trump and his children and maybe even his grandchildren. So the Supreme Court said, okay, that also has to go back to a lower court, and you, Congress, have to shrink your request until it can meet this sort of four-part test that the Supreme Court laid out describing when a Congress can ask for a president's financial records. Again, we're talking about a pretty long delay.
Right. The argument from the president's lawyers here was, in effect, this is a fishing expedition. There's no specific need for this information, this wide variety of information that Congress is asking for. Does that kind of sum up their case here?
That's right. Congress really got itself in trouble because the Supreme Court never likes to have people come before it and say, hey, our power is unlimited. There's no limit on our power. And that was effectively Congress's argument to the Supreme Court. When they went before them a couple of months ago, the Supreme Court said, hey, you know, you want all this information from the president. Is there anything you could ask for that would be too much? You know, do you recognize any limits on your ability to seek the president's financial documents? And the House was basically like, no, we can look at anything, any issue we might possibly legislate on in the future. And that seemed to be way too much for the court, so they pushed back.
We're talking to David Farenthold, reporter for The Washington Post, looking at two U.S. Supreme Court decisions on the president's tax returns. Long story short, they might come out to a prosecutor in Manhattan. Not going to happen soon. The public, good chance we won't see it until Election Day, possibly well after that. David, let's look at this wider saga of how Donald Trump's tax returns, before he was President Trump, became this this Maltese Falcon in some ways that everybody wants to get their hands on, but nobody can quite manage to do that.
That's right. And just to explain, this is not something that we're doing just because, you know, we want to get Donald Trump. Donald Trump has done this unprecedented thing where he's taken his business into the White House with him and all the connections and loans and business arrangements that comes with that. And so the president has a set of private relationships with banks, with investors, with customers that he knows about and they know about, but we, the public, don't know about. That's why it's important to try to get his tax returns and other financial documents. Is I want to understand how President Trump sees the world and what he sees as his connection. Because I only know half the picture now, or less than half the picture. So that's why people have been interested in getting them. And Trump has been saying since he ran for president, I want to release him, but I can't for various reasons. Most often, my returns are under audit, which is a assertion he's never proven. So he's made that excuse for a long time and still seems to be making it today.
There's no legal requirement that a presidential candidate running for office has to release these tax returns. General precedent is they do, right?
That's right. One of the things that Trump has always been good at is using honor systems, sort of exploiting honor systems. He finds some place where everybody else does one thing, not because they have to, but because everybody else does it. And then he doesn't do that thing and takes advantage of the advantage that gives him. And so this is just one example of that. Every other presidential candidate had released their tax returns, some of them probably grudgingly because they thought, well, I've got to. People expect it. Trump just didn't do it and said, well, you know, come after me, make me do it. And nobody's been able to do it so far.
In the past, when we've talked to you back during the campaign, actually, David, you were looking at the Trump Foundation and how it used its resources in creative ways, ways that it wasn't supposed to, it turned out. Are there particular questions that you are waiting to have answered that you think could be answered by looking at these tax return records?
Oh, sure. I mean, we might know his true revenue of his business, his true debt. You know, how much gain or loss he counts every year. You might know something about who he owes money to or who pays money to him. And you might also just know whether he complies with tax laws. You have to remember that the Trump Foundation's taxes we could see because it was a nonprofit. And so that's done by the same tax firm. It's, you know, on information provided by Trump's business. And there were huge amounts of errors in there. Some of them, it actually got the Trump Foundation sued by the New York Attorney General. So we've seen the work of these people before in the tax returns of the Trump Foundation and found some pretty major errors in it, which makes us think maybe there's, you know, the same people might have produced similar mistakes in the Trump organization or Trump's personal taxes.
You mentioned Donald Trump's former personal attorney back before he was president, Michael Cohen. He testified before Congress that I believe is the Trump organization had reported real estate values differently if they were talking to a tax assessor versus an insurance company versus a mortgage agent. This came out in a New York Times report. Apparently, it'll be part of Mary Trump, his niece's book. Is that something that these kind of tax records could confirm, that different values were reported to different parties of interest?
Well, that's the kind of thing that the House was asking for, particularly. They had asked Deutsche Bank, you know, when Trump came to you to get loans, because a lot of Trump's loans in recent years came from Deutsche Bank, you know, what did Trump tell you about his ability to pay, about his assets? You know, did he inflate the value of his assets and fool you? And that's the kind of document that we are now, the House is now not going to get, at least not for a long time, because of the Supreme Court's ruling.
So what kind of things are you watching for next? Are there other avenues out there where people are trying to get either this particular information or comparable information via different sources?
These two are the most advanced. So, if it was going to happen before the election, I think it was going to happen through one of these vehicles. One of the really interesting things to me was the Democrats that took over the House in the 2018 elections actually moved really slowly to challenge Trump on questions about his personal finances. They seemed to proceed as if Donald Trump was not Donald Trump and that he would just comply with a nice letter. And we've seen that in so many different areas involving his tax returns, his hotels, his loans. They gave Trump a long time to respond. And when he didn't respond, then they went to court. But it was far too late to get any sort of answers out of the court system before the 2020 election. So there are a bunch of other efforts going on like this, but none of them are as advanced as these. And I don't see any of them getting to this point before 2020 election.
And we've seen hints over time. Some records from the 80s, I think, were in that Mary Trump leak to the New York Times. One or two pages of the president's taxes had come up somewhere along the way. Do you think there's a likelihood, if it hasn't happened yet, of other leaks of that nature? Just in our last 30 seconds or so, David.
Well, you never know. If anybody has them, I'd love to see them. And I know they're out there, but I can't predict they'll come out if they haven't come out yet.
David, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Thank you.
David Fahrenthold is a reporter for The Washington Post. He covers the Trump family and its business interests. He joins today to talk about a couple of U.S. Supreme Court decisions on efforts to get a look at President Trump's tax returns. Both 7-2 decisions. One ultimately sent it back to a Manhattan prosecutor to subpoena. It will allow a subpoena of those documents. It won't allow presidential immunity to stop that. But as we heard, that doesn't mean they would come out ever or anytime soon between now and Election Day. Also, a congressional effort to look at President Trump's financial records of various sorts sent back to a lower court. Developments on those could follow, could be months, if not years, before any of those, as we just heard, go through.